The following is a recording for Kathy Drury with the American Hospital Association in Chicago for the April National Content Call on Tuesday, April 14th, 2015 at 11 a.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have all of our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines are in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of today's presentation, we will open the floor for questions, and at that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Ashley Hoffman. Ms. Hoffman, you may now begin.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us. We're excited to have you with us at today's event, which will focus on sustaining your progress in reducing clotties. Before we begin today's presentation, just a quick reminder that this is a webinar, so please be sure that you log in through the webinar link in order to see our slides. Also, a copy of the slides and the recording will be posted on the project website later this week. The PowerPoint slides are actually already on the website if you'd like to save them, along with additional resources. Today's presenter is Dr. Eugene Chu. He is the Director of Hospital Medicine for Boulder Community Hospital. Board certified in internal medicine, Dr. Chu earned his medical degree from Tufts University and completed a residency in internal medicine at the University of Colorado Health Sciences Center. And now I'd like to turn the call over to Dr. Chu.
Great. Thank you, Ashley. It's really great to be here and to be talking about sustainment. Next slide is fine. Just wanted to say that a lot of this work has been done by Sarah Klein, who's also on the call, and Mohamed Faqih, who's one of the principal investigators for the On the Cusp Stop CADI project. And this will be kind of a synthesis of all of our all the work that we've done to kind of put together a body of knowledge about sustainment to help everyone who is on this collaborative sustain the gains that we hope everyone's made through the implementation phase. Next slide. There's not a lot of literature on sustainment. I just wanted to include a couple of articles that helped Sarah Mohammed and I kind of shape our ideas about sustainment for your reference. Next slide. And what we're going to try to accomplish this session is to learn about the difference between implementation and sustainment, to identify key elements in sustainment of process improvement initiatives, to recognize your unit's readiness for sustainment, and to understand steps that need to take place before moving to sustainment. All right, next slide. And just to get an idea of where everyone's at, I want to use a few polling questions. And throughout the webinar, I'm going to try to put in as many audience response questions as possible, because I feel like for these webinars, it seems to be one of the downsides is there's not a lot of communication between audience and myself and each other. So I wanted to get people thinking and communicating. So first question, are you ready or is your unit ready for sustainment? Yes, no, or unsure?
So we'll give everyone a few more seconds to get their response in. Just go ahead and click the radio dial, the blue radio dial for yes, no, or unsure. And then we'll show the results.
Oh, you can just put, okay. Okay, let's go ahead and look at results. Okay, good. Looks like the majority, 60%, almost two-thirds are ready. The majority of the minority is unsure, and then there's a good number, about 1 in 8 or so, 1 in 7 that are not feeling ready. Okay, good. Next question. Do you know the elements that need to be in place before transitioning to sustainment? Yes, no, or unsure? Okay, why don't we see the results of this? Okay, so about half say yes, a third unsure, and about 1 in 5 say no. So that is also good. So some ambivalence there, and I'm glad if everyone said yes, then we could just end the call and move on with our days. So, okay, so next slide. Implementation. So And again, we're gonna go back to these same slides later in the same polling questions later in the talk to see if we've made some improvements in those areas. But implementation, I'd like for everyone to think about it as kind of an enzymatic reaction. So in the beginning, as you know, when you're bringing anything together or trying to get something off the ground, so to speak, startup costs are pretty high. And, you know, our change schema is the four E's. We use CUSP. And so the idea is you engage, educate, and the next slide, execute and evaluate. So again, the four E's of change. And again, the implementation phase should take a lot more resources, both time resources, human resources, and financial resources. And I think all of you have experienced that in this change process and other ones that you've been through. Next slide. And then sustainment, which is the phase that I think a lot of us have gone through in various implementations or are looking towards now, should not cost as much energy, shouldn't take as many resources, and shouldn't be as time intensive. And again, it should be a very different phase. And the key is, if the implementation is done properly, then sustainment should, it still needs work, but it shouldn't be the heavy lifting that's done in implementation. And then the cusp part is just to show that if you have structured implementation, that you can actually decrease your energy costs and become more efficient. Okay, next slide. Okay, so again, the other part of our initiative is that we think of implementation, and again, we're going to transition this into sustainment, as both technical and socio-adaptive. Next slide. And the basic part of the technical part is that it's winning minds. Next slide. And the socio-adaptive part is winning hearts. Socio-adaptive part is winning hearts. Sorry about the tongue twister there. And so again, in implementation, you have to kind of instill the knowledge and then get people to feel and believe about what is happening. And then in the whole setting of an environment that's conducive to change, which is next slide. So once you've won hearts and minds, won your hearts, educated the minds, you create an environment for change that is conducive to success. And that's when you have the highest likelihood of having a successful implementation, which you really can't go into sustainment without a successful implementation. If your implementation is not successful, you need to kind of back up and try again before thinking about sustainment, because you can't really sustain something that was a failure. That would not be, you know, I think it sounds obvious, but, you know, I think all of us can think of times where we moved in sustainment, where we actually didn't implement well. And then you never actually, it's just kind of lost resources when you start trying to do that. Okay, next slide. Okay, so again, in terms of hearts and minds, the hardest part to change are the hearts. It's easy to tell someone what the, you know, the indications for a Foley catheter are, you know, how many cc's it is for urinary retention on a bladder scanner, and, you know, the definition of cavity. I think everyone's capable of teaching and learning that. But to believe that this is important and valuable and that this is really what we want to do and what's best for the patient is a huge challenge. And so what we're trying to do is change culture. And so culture is defined as a shared set of social values and beliefs that guides actions and decisions within an organization or a unit or a family. So if you think about the culture of your unit, of your family, of your nation, think about your values and beliefs and how they guide actions and decisions. And specifically about cavity culture, think about what the values and beliefs about urinary catheters are and how they guide the actions and decisions, particularly when you place them, when you remove them, how you place them, how you maintain them, and how you remove them, and then about urinary culture, What are your attitudes and beliefs about urinary cultures, and how does that guide your actions and decisions? And that's what we're really trying to get at. And I'd say one big pitfall in moving from implementation to sustainment is you can have a lot of processes set up, but if your culture is still to put in catheters in every patient that comes to the ED that has a mental status change, you're really not going to gain traction, because you can always work around different processes if you don't believe in them. Okay, so next slide. And so what we're trying to do is develop a coherent culture about urinary catheters. And we want widespread agreement about the core values and beliefs that are going to drive people's actions and decisions. And so that is what we're trying to achieve socioadaptively within a unit or an organization or a state or as a nation. Okay, next slide. So how do you know when you achieve culture change, achieve the socioadaptive part? Well, I think a lot of us have heard this anecdote. It's Potter Stewart. He was a Supreme Court justice. And, you know, we don't have great culture change measurement tools. We have the HSOPs and things like that, but nothing. I don't think we have anything particular to Cowdy. He presided over a case in the 60s in Ohio where a theater owner was, fined and convicted of showing obscene movies. It was a French film called Les Amants, The Lovers. And so it went to the Supreme Court of Justice to say, you know, is this obscenity? Or is this, you know, the crude word would be pornography. And he said, look, I don't know what the exact definition of obscenity is, but I know it when I see it, and this is not pornography or obscenity. So I would challenge everyone to have a pulse on their unit or on their organization or the different subgroups, the nurses and physicians, and to have a feeling for whether the culture has changed about urinary catheters. Do people really believe that they have a lot of harms and that we should really be strict about how we put them in, when we put them in, and when we take them out? Or is it still kind of like, no, they're not really that harmful. Even if they're on the floor, I need my eyes and nose, and that's more important than the potential harm. Okay, so next slide. So for ease of change, we talked about this a little bit, and I kind of substitute environment for execution. It's something that over time I've thought of, but just to be clear, it is technically execution. Okay, next slide. And then sustainment is about effectiveness. So again, you really shouldn't move into sustainment unless you had an effective implementation. So if you didn't do anything, you're not going to sustain anything. Or if you got worse, you definitely don't want to sustain that. Okay, so, and it's not good enough to kind of feel like you had something. You need to actually prove it, because that will help you move into sustainment by saying, look, you know, here are the things, and we'll go into that later. Institutionalization, so that idea is hardwiring, putting things into place in the institution that, again, is an environmental change. Capacity is having the appropriate resources, time, people, and finances, that, again, shouldn't be as much as implementation capacity, but shouldn't be nothing. Because if you don't give any capacity, or if you build capacity and don't sustain capacity, your sustainment won't be successful. And then context is about having internal and external environments, and Sarah's done a lot of work on this, that continue to give you motivation for sustainment. And part of that context is motivation to measure and continue to give feedback at some kind of more background level to the groups that have already experienced the change. Okay, next slide. So again, we're moving from implementation, engage, educate, environment, evaluate, to sustainment, which is showing effectiveness, hardwiring, having appropriate resources, and the appropriate context in terms of continued motivation and feedback. Next slide. Okay, so we're going to correlate engagement with effectiveness. So to sustain engagement, we're going to go with effectiveness. And next slide. So for those of you who heard me talk about change management, the way we engage staff, human beings, people, it's three pronged. Is one, we engage through vision. And again, that's part of leadership, is to have a vision of where we're going to be going with this. We engage through tapping into people's passion. And for people in healthcare, that's really healing, helping people. And then we engage through finances. And again, as we know in CUSP, we want to engage our administration. And our administration, you know, are the stewards of our mission, which is to help people. But to steward it properly, it has to be financially viable. We all know that. So we need to show financial engagement too. Okay, next slide. So this is a patient that I just took care of within the last month here in Boulder. And this is a story about a patient that's actually where we're at baseline, where we haven't implemented, we're not ready for sustainment. Okay, so he's in his early to mid-80s. And he came in, he actually lived in Indiana, and he fell. His family's here in Boulder. His daughters are, at least some of his daughters. And he fell. He was getting up, and he kind of like fell back, retropulsed onto the toilet bowl, hurt his femur and hip. And then he was not moving well. So they brought him into the ED. And the ED took x-rays, and he didn't have any fractures. So, but he couldn't, you know, he was living independently, he couldn't go back home. So he was, you know, again, wheelchair bound, he was on a walker before, and, you know, he was being set up for placement in a skilled nursing facility. So he was immobile and had it fully placed, and he went to the skilled nursing facility, stayed there for a while, and then his family brought him here to Colorado. And he was in another skilled nursing facility in Colorado. And, you know, 4 days before admission, he looks down at his Foley catheter and goes, "What's this doing inside me?" And, you know, he had some dementia and whatnot. So he, you know, that kind of got blown off and nothing really happened. 4 days later, on his day of admission, he didn't show up for breakfast. He was found, you know, obtunded or, you know, with a very hypoactive delirium in his room. He was brought in. He had a white count of 20. He was febrile. He was mildly hypotensive. He was fluid resuscitated. Chest x-ray showed maybe a minimal infiltrate in the left base. He had no cough prior to this. He had no diarrhea. His urine was quite cloudy. And since there is no other source, because we wouldn't culture the urine just for being cloudy. No, we don't do that. But we had no other source for infection, so we cultured the urine. It grew out greater than 10 to the 5th E. coli. And, you know, he was sent to the ICU for sepsis secondary to urinary source. I shouldn't have said that. But anyway, so he actually ended up never recovering from his delirium. And he actually ended up going to hospice. Okay, so let's go to the next page. Okay, so what is the diagnosis? Okay, let's look at the answer. Okay, so he had cavity. Next question. What was the indication for the urinary? What was the HCPCS approved indication for urinary catheter placement for him? Okay. Yes. So there is really no approved. I mean, you know, again, a little bit of a tricky question, but everyone in the audience is ready for sustainment, but there was no indication. Okay, so this is a story that you hear in a healthcare facility that is not ready for sustainment. You still have a lot of these catheters that are not being placed appropriately, and you have a lot of bad outcomes because of this. And he died an early death because of this urinary catheter. It never needed to happen. He lost time with his family, time that he could have been alive doing things that he valued. So this is, it's tragic. Okay, next slide. So this is a story that I heard in Nevada last year when I was working with them and in their final learning session. And I thought this was quite inspiring. So this was a learning session 3, getting ready for sustainment. And this is the kind of story that you want to be telling to the unit and to the people that are involved, because it motivates for sustainment. And so this is actually, an LTAC, a long-term acute care center, or a skilled nursing facility, where they received a patient that had a Foley catheter from another facility, and they looked at the indications. They said, well, it's placed for incontinence, and we know that that's not what we need, what we should, be doing. And so they wanted to take the Foley catheter out. But the patient was like, I like my Foley catheter. It makes me, it's comfortable. I mean, like, I don't have to worry about getting up. I don't have to worry about wetting myself and things like that. And they reassured her, we'll take care of your skin. We'll make sure that, we give you help. We'll do scheduled voiding with you. But she wanted her Foley catheter in place. Okay, so next slide. So what did the staff do with Mrs. B's urinary catheter? So they changed it to an antimicrobial catheter because they said, oh, well, it's going to be there a long time. We might as well make sure we have something that prevents infection. Just leave it in. There's no data for antimicrobial catheters. It's more convenient for everyone if she doesn't want it. Change it out every 3 weeks. Well, maybe we can compromise here, and instead of like just leaving it out, we'll just change it every 3 weeks. There's some evidence for that, right? And then wait until she fell asleep to take it out. Okay, next slide. Okay. So they actually waited until she fell asleep, and then they took it out. And I was like, wow, that is, and they actually showed how they kind of snuck up, and they were really quiet, and it was actually quite inspiring to hear how dedicated they were to removing her from harm's way. And so that's what they did. And I think these are the stories you want to, and I have stories from my own organization where nurses will say to family members, I know you're worried about, the incontinence and things like that, but, we don't want your loved one to have to suffer an infection from this. I'll take care of the skin. I'll take care of the cleanliness. I'll make her comfortable and reassuring her. And those are the things that really inspire you to sustain the changes that we've made. Okay, so you need the stories. Next slide. You need the finances. So this comes from catheterout.org, and Sanjay Saints and his group in Michigan put this together. It's a really fantastic resource if everyone hasn't been there. But you can put in numbers for your own organization. I just put in some crude numbers, and to show that you can save from $250,000 to $1 million just on Foley urinary catheter interventions. And again, this is the baseline and implementation data, because this is what gets you on the map with the administrators to say, we need this money, we need this time to do this, because you need to show a return on investment. Okay, next slide. But when you actually moving to sustainment, what you need to do, so this no longer works when you're going to sustainment. So when you're asking for resources for sustainment, you can't really go to projections. You have to go to accomplishments. And what you need to do is show urinary catheter, decreased cavities, decreased utilization, and, in that sense, translate it into money. And there are ways to translate it into money, estimates of decreased cost per cavity, $1,000 or so per cavity, and then looking at also value-based purchasing and its contribution to that. And again, part of your team should be a financial person, or you should be able to go to your CFO or one of his staff members to help you create a financial impact. So again, money is really important for every organization. And so if you're going to ask for sustainment resources, you need to show that you've created value in your implementation. Okay, next. And then vision. So again, transformational leadership, as Sanjay will talk about, a lot of that is based on visionary type leadership. And all of us have worked as leaders for this initiative and others. And I think as leaders, one thing that is really helpful is to have a clear and succinct vision. And, you know, that vision would be, for Caudi, very simple. You know, our vision would be to aspire to an environment or a unit or a hospital that where no patient is unnecessarily harmed by a urinary catheter. It's very simple, and it could be an infectious harm, it could be a non-infectious harm. But we just don't want any patient to ever be unnecessarily harmed by a urinary catheter. And so what does that mean to us? It means that every catheter that is placed has an indication, and once that indication is over, it is immediately removed. And then when it's placed in a sterile, aseptic manner and maintained properly, and any culture that is drawn appropriately. Okay, so that's really our vision. It's very simple. It's something that we can talk about and something that people can understand. Okay, next slide. And then, so I think it's important to be able to speak to that vision when you're moving to sustainment, to be able to tell people, wow, you know, I see a unit where no one is being harmed unnecessarily by a urinary catheter, where every catheter that's being placed is being placed appropriately, and once it's not indicated anymore, it's being removed. It's amazing what we've done. You know, we've reached that point. So I think speaking to the vision, speaking to a journey and a place in the journey, and then saying, and I want us to keep this up. You know, this is important that we don't let it slide back. Okay, next. So the next part about change is, again, so engagement is about winning the hearts. Education is about the minds. And so we're going to talk about hardwiring the minds and giving capacity. Okay? So next. So again, we educate about facts and flow. So it's about, you know, kind of, you know, all the different factoids, and we'll go into those, and then how to do things. Okay? Next. And then through sustainment, the education is much easier. So it's really hard to get your first degree as whatever you are, a nurse, an infection preventionist, a physician, but you can sustain it in a much easier fashion. The startup costs are gone. Next. The facts. I think a lot of us are familiar with these facts. And I think everyone recognizes that when we're starting off on this journey, when we're implementing, it takes a lot of energy, a lot of time to get people educated. Next. And then the flow is, how do we do things? You know, how do we do the skin care? How do we use the bladder scanner? How do we use the condom catheters? Things that sometimes may seem simple, but, you know, if you dig down, you know, there's a lot of variability in how people are doing things, and education is really important to decrease variability. Next. Okay. So here's an example. You know, we all learned the definition of CAUTI. 2008, a change to symptomatic UTI. 2013, a change to give correlation between lab findings, urinary catheter, and clinical findings. And 2015, we have more changes. So this is taken from a slide that was just presented within the last few months in this forum. So what are the CAUTI definition changes for 2015? Requirement for greater than 10 to the 5th organisms. Exclusion of non-bacteria as sole pathogens, use of same pathogen list for symptomatic and asymptomatic UTI, all of the above. Okay, let's look at our answers. Yeah, it's all of the above. Okay, and so again, you know, we can do the initial education, but maintaining that is going to be important. But again, as you can realize, you know, all you have to do is the maintenance is not nearly as time or resource intensive as the implementation. Next. Okay, so environment. environment is also, I think everyone can realize that change often doesn't happen unless you're in the right environment. And if you look at negative aspects of change, you know, there's the reports in the Vietnam War of heavy heroin use amongst Vietnam soldiers. So when the Vietnam War was over, they actually looked at all the different programs they need to put into place to support the soldiers coming back from Vietnam, because they thought they were going to have an epidemic of heroin addiction amongst this generation of young men. And so what they actually found was when they went back to their hometowns and this and that, the vast majority of the soldiers stopped using heroin. And that really lent credence to the fact that the environment itself can have a huge impact to change. So what we want to do is create hardwiring and capacity, again, the process, Donovidian's two or three pillars to equality, and within structure we have people and things, and within process we have procedures and protocols. Okay, next. And same idea, again, once we put into place good structure and good process, it's a matter of maintenance. Next. Okay, so the people. Again, I think everyone has formed teams, hopefully well-working teams, and you know, nursing, physicians, infection preventionists, as we said, finance can be involved, project management, administration. So we need the people. Next. But one thing that has been identified in sustainment literature is the fact that what you really need to sustain is not only the team, but someone that's a leader or someone that remains responsible for the initiative. And in this sense, you know, again, Sanjay talks about transformational and transactional leadership. This may be someone who has more of a tendency towards transactional leadership, kind of keeping things maintained, performance management and things like that, and not necessarily a big transformation. But again, someone needs to be identified and given the capacity to continue that. Next. So the things, I think most of the group has put into place, condom catheters, made sure there are enough bedside commodes, bladder scanners, male and female urinary urinals. And so again, next slide. Again, new bladder scanners come out, new condom catheters come out, new female urinals come out. There are different things that are always evolving. And then there's just the idea of refreshing things. You know, every 3 years, a new laptop or a new desktop. Same thing with the equipment that you have. Okay, so the people and the structures, and then the protocols. We have our nurse-driven protocols, insertion removal protocols. You can have, order sets for to ensure that any urinary catheter that is inserted has an indication. There may be skin care protocols, acute urinary retention protocols. So those all are implemented in the next. And then maintained, sometimes maintenance may be kind of transitioning them over to electronic form, or, the HCPCS guidelines may be updated, and again, CALI definitions, so maintaining them. Next. And then the procedures. So, again, I think all of us recognize and advocate for kind of economies of scale, where if you're looking at urinary catheters, you put that into a device risk evaluation tool where you're looking at all devices, lines, central lines, urinary catheters, ventilators, et cetera. And again, that next slide would need to be maintained. Okay, next slide. And then the last part is the evaluation, which is creating a context for your implementation or sustainment. And next slide. So in terms of context, we think of this in terms of internal and external. And again, Sarah has written on this, and may be able to help us later with filling this out. But in terms of internal, a lot of this is about where the organization is, and part of this is culture, and part of it is mechanics, operations. And if your organization really has a culture of safety and is looking at, hospital-acquired conditions, and the leaders are advocating it, then you create an internal environment that gives you more probability of sustaining success. Okay, and the next slide. And then there is external environment. So external environment is how, the state, the nation, the region puts pressure on you internally to change and sustain change. And I think we all are aware of hospital-acquired conditions, that's value-based purchasing, and things like that. Okay, next slide. And so, again, when you think about evaluation, I think all of us are submitting data through this collaborative. And if you look at the data submission for CADI rates, the first 5 months are monthly, and then after that it's quarterly. So the idea there is that if you've actually had success, again, you ratchet it down, bring it a little bit down, less time, less energy intensive, and spread it out. And what that actually means to you with, CADI rate reporting or urinary catheter prevalence, it's going to be individual, and some of it will depend on how much energy it takes to extract data. So next slide. So again, matrix, again, national, state, hospital, unit, and provider level matrix. So again, for physicians, if you see your, for a surgeon, your perioperative wound infection rate is high, or your, complication rate is high, then you're actually going to be motivated to change. And if you get it low, you're going to want to keep it low. Physicians are intensely competitive by nature, no matter what they tell you they are. I lead a physician group, and that is very helpful, is to, have transparency in data to show people their quality, their finances, their performance, and that really is something that is helpful in terms of driving change and sustaining it. Okay, next. Okay, so your individual units. How do you get your metrics, your CADI rates, and your urinary catheter prevalence and appropriateness? Let's leave out appropriateness because I think that's almost always going to be chart reviewed. But just urinary catheter prevalence and CADI rates, is it chart reviewed? Is it automated, or is it mixed? Okay, let's look at the answers here. Okay, so mixed. And, not a lot have it fully automated. So this is what I would expect, is that there's a lot of mix. And, again, I think we all appreciate how time-intensive metrics can be, and that may be why a lot of times we don't get metrics that are helpful, and physicians are notoriously have a paucity of metrics to drive performance. But again, if your organization, and again, if you can just ratchet it down to spot checking or something to keep giving some feedback to units and to providers about their CADI and their urinary catheter utilization, that will be essential to keeping your change sustained. Obviously, if it's automated, you have a lot higher chance of being able to do that. But I'd say, on the other hand, moving other things to the top is important, and kind of keeping CADI on the back burner, but still there is important, because you don't want to get in the face too much and kind of turn people off and get people numb to it. So anyway, again, metrics are very important. Context. So context would be internal and external drivers to sustainment, and then showing your metrics. Okay. Okay, next slide. And about that, again, in terms of culture, celebrating success, celebrating your metrics is really important. So don't forget the cookies. Next slide. And again, just kind of wrapping things up in terms of this part of the talk, think about the overall idea of moving from implementation to sustainment and the need to kind of ratchet things down and talk about, you know, effectiveness, institutionalization, capacity, and context in the sustainment period. Next. And again, just what we went over, the different ideas and the different phases. Next. Okay, so now it's your turn. And I thought we thought it'd be great if everyone in attendance could you know, kind of chime in on where they are in sustainment and what, you know, what their concerns are, what they feel like they've done well, and where they feel like they could do better. So next. So are you ready for sustainment? We already asked that. So let's answer again. So now that we've talked a little bit more formally about it. Okay. So good, good. Three quarters, so it's actually gone up. I think it was 60% in the beginning. Okay, good. And less people unsure, so I think people have more clarity on their readiness state. Good. Next. Do you have evidence of effectiveness in your through your implementation? Do you feel like you can transition from implementation to sustainment and tell people about how effective you've been? Okay, so let's answer that. And let's look at the, good. So a lot of good evidence. Good. And again, you don't, just be honest, this is all anonymous. You know, like, you don't have to be ready for sustainment. This is for everyone to be able to, you know, kind of, become prepared or to feel more confident about it. Okay. Good. So most people do. And so, where is your evidence coming from? I have stories. I'm ready to tell stories. I can go to administration, to the C-suite with financial numbers. And again, it doesn't have to be fancy. It can just be number of calorie reduced, converted that to numbers. Talk about value-based purchasing and estimate how much calories contribute to that. Hospital Acquired Conditions Committee, go to them. Vision, I can talk about like where I see the unit. And I have some mix of those. I have all of them or none of them. Okay, so go ahead and give your answer. Good. So almost a third, a quarter, have all, which is fantastic, and almost two-thirds have a mix, which is great also, and a lot of people have, you know, a little bit of other things. But really, that's really fantastic. I think everyone should be proud of what they've accomplished in this collaborative. Okay, next. So our nurses know, and this is just to get an idea of where education is in terms of readiness, HCPCS indications, proper insertion technique, how to maintain a closed system. So they know about the urimeter issue. They know about, you know, where the bag should be when they're transporting, and they know how to do aseptic. We're confident in their aseptic technique. So all, none, some, or one. Okay. Let's look at the answers. Good. So the majority is some or all. The vast majority is some or all. And that's fantastic. And again, to move into sustainment, you don't have to be perfect. You should be pretty darn confident in, you know, and I think a lot of people, you know, might be like, insertion technique, we still have some variability there, or HCPCS indications, but you can still work on some things. Okay, next. So physicians, are they ready for sustainment? So do they know the HCPCS indications? Do they know what the indications of culturing are? Do they know when you need a catheter for eyes and nose? So, or none of that? Some of that at all. I mean, if you know none, if the physicians don't know any of that, I'd be hesitant to move into sustainment. Okay, good. So good. So again, the physicians aren't perfect yet, and still need a little work, it seems like, but looks like there's a decent amount of readiness. Next. Okay, so we have institutionalized, we have hardwired into the environment a nurse-driven removal protocol, and it can be paper or computerized. A urinary catheter insertion order set. So when you order something, you have to pick an indication. Device rounds, all, some, or none. And again, we're just trying to get an idea of how hardwired your institution has become. Okay, wow, a full quarter have done all of that. That is fantastic. And 75% have done all or some. So it sounds like there's some good readiness here. Okay, next one. We have built capacity. So we have bladder scanners. We have condom catheters. We have, appropriate skin care teams, whether it's like lift teams or wound care or infrastructure for skin care. We have all, some, or none. Okay? Great. Great. The two-thirds have all of that. And a quarter, so almost everyone has, the vast majority has all of that. That's fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, next. We have a team identified. We know who's going to be continuing to work on this and sustain it. Okay, let's look at the answers. Good. Most people know who the team is. Okay, and this is the key one. Is that team sustainable? Will they hold together? Do you think they're going to hold together? Okay, let's look at the answers. Good. So a good amount of confidence and then some uncertainty. Okay, very good. And again, having the right amount of time. Is the leader identified? So is someone going to continue to lead this? Okay, let's look at the answers. Good. Almost everyone knows who the leader is going to be. And next question, is that leader sustainable? So, is that person going to be able to keep on top of this? Have enough time. Good. Good. Okay. Next slide. Is there a plan for continued metrics? Or are we going to just, say, thank goodness this is over. I'm not looking at one more chart about urinary catheters ever. Okay, so let's look at this. Yes, okay. So this is looking good. And again, this is what, for this or for whatever change implementation you're doing, you should go through this exercise. Next. And again, the leader is going to hold the people accountable for the metrics. Correct. Okay, and then the key question, have you achieved culture change? Do people believe it? If people believe that urinary catheters are harmful and that you don't need them for eyes and nose on the floor and you don't need them for comfort and you don't need them for incontinence, do you believe that your culture has changed? Yes, no, maybe. Okay, so a little bit more ambivalence here. Okay, so again, you can have a lot of stuff, but if you have people that don't believe it, I think it's gonna be a little bit of a struggle. There might be some backslide. So I would say one of the things to do is to really talk up the gains, to talk up the numbers that everyone has, to really recognize the people that are the believers and that have done a great job, talk about all the, things, the patient stories, the money and things like that, and slowly, kind of work on the people that are still not part of the culture we're trying to create for urinary catheters. Okay, next. So are you ready? This is the last time we're going back to the beginning. Are you ready for a sustainment? Yes, no, or maybe? So this is the third time we've answered this. Okay, let's look. Okay, good. I think a lot of feeling that there's readiness for change. For change, for transition into sustainment, and I think maybe there are a little bit more maybes in the second time, and I think maybe the culture thing is something that I think is something that may be one of the last things to really work on, and maybe physician education too is what we found. Okay, next. And do you now know the elements that you need to have to sustain your gains? and I'm going to take this personally. Ah, thank you. Thank you. So, okay. And the next slide, I think that is the end. And at this point, we're just going to open it up for discussion amongst the group to talk about what they're thinking about with their implementation and sustainment.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the 1 key on your touch-tone phone now. Again, that was star 1. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. Please limit your questions to one at a time. Again, to ask a question for our presenter, please press star 1. Our first question comes from Kathy Schlau with Michigan.
Yes, I was wondering, I've been using the indications here, and we have a nurse-driven Foley catheter removal protocol also. But the accurate I and O for ICU only, we came across an issue with the provider saying that he went to the website for, Board of Nephrology, and if a patient has encephalitis, that they couldn't go on their own, possibly in the urinal, and they might go in the bed, and they might go on the floor, and they wanted accurate INO, but it wasn't an ICU setting.
Oh, I see. Okay. So if they, so basically the idea that if they're incontinent, for whatever reason that they, yeah. You know, that is really, so and this is on the floor, is that correct?
Yes. And that was also a DNA patient, so they didn't want, they weren't going to put them in the unit, but they needed accurate INO for acute renal failure, and so the patient was on, I can't remember.
Yeah.
Really well with and so there was not a good way to measure the
yeah. So, you know, what hospitals have done is a couple things. Is, you know, I think the getting of the daily weights is really important. And so daily weights are, again, so, you know, what's ironic is most people look at the eyes and nose, and even when we're using Foley's, they don't believe them. So they always look at the eyes and nose, the weights, and the clinical status. So again, buffing up the ability to really get daily weights. And the other way to do it is to use the pads. And, you know, a lot of hospitals have implemented superabsorbent pads, especially like adult diapers, and then to weigh the pads, just like you would for a child, and to get eyes and nose that way. And, you know, if they're, you know, again, if they're DNR, then you have to think, okay, I mean, and then there are times where, okay, is this really an exception where you really don't have confidence in your clinical volume assessment, in your ability to get daily weights, to get kind of a measurement, an indirect measurement through weighing the pads, or, you know, and then if they're DNR, then you almost might say, well, gosh, you know, we put a Foley catheter in them and they get a UTI, then that might be the end, you know, and they're not going to put on pressors. They're going to die. So, you know, I think it's kind of a back and forth. And, you know, we've done this for a while here. Our nephrologists have been on board and they feel like they can manage things, without the eyes and O's. So again, maybe having a champion who is a nephrologist that can kind of say, well, this is how I do it, and have a peer come by and say, you know, yeah, you know, in this case, you know, this is, you know, we can use the daily weights or something like that. So I think those are all strategies. And then sometimes, you know, there are times where, you know, there's certain last bastions where there are holdouts that over time, either it'll be attrition, they'll go away, like they'll retire or they'll go to somewhere else, or they'll finally be like, you know, I can't be the only one in the hospital that's demanding this, and then they'll change.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. We have no questions at this time.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks for everyone, attending. And Ashley has my email, and please feel free to email me with any other questions that come up. And enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you.